from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia. Online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, hundreds of children and their families descend on the Capitol for their lobbying day. But so did advocates of a bill they say protects their religious freedoms. The bill's opponents say it will legalize discrimination in the state. And the House and Senate Judiciary Chairs join us to discuss the contentious pieces of legislation making their way through the major committees. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. About 60 people signed up to speak at a public hearing this morning over House Bill 4012, the West Virginia Religious Freedom Restoration Act. As of 2015, 21 states had approved such laws. Law supporters say protect their ability to follow their religious beliefs. Opponents, however, argue the measure is a license to discriminate. Here is some of today's testimony.
This bill resurrects, in my mind, not only current struggles for basic human rights, but certainly past struggles. Slavery, convict leasing, forced servitude, Jim Crow, property damage, attack dogs, people clad in white sheets with white hoods. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 saw human rights gained that were too long denied. We've come too far to turn back.
If you're not going to serve me based on your religious beliefs, just put right on your front door, no Jews, no blacks, no Muslims, no gays, and that'll save us the hassle and the indignity. Thank you.
We are in support of HB 4012. We want to say thank you to the members who sponsored this bill. This is good legislation every West Virginian can be proud of. My constituency, who is in support of this bill, we'll not need to put any kind of sticker on our windows because we'll serve everybody who walks in the door. That's never been an issue. Never been an issue. But it's ridiculous to ask every business to participate in every possible type of event, every type of business opportunity. You have to have the right to be able to follow your business mission.
Our state has a lot of challenges. We need to improve our infrastructure, improve our environment, improve our job situation. We need to welcome everyone to this state. We need to bring young people in and stop the outflow of young people leaving. Mountaineers are always free. They're free to be who they are, to practice their religious freedom, but not to discriminate against others.
The problem is that a lot of people restrict religion to the doors of the church, but the church is just a building. The real true church is the people that are in the church that make up the church. And there are people that would want people to believe that people of faith need to check their religious beliefs at the door when they leave church instead of carrying them out. And by doing so, that causes a true person of faith to deny who they are as being a member of the church and being holding deeply held religious beliefs.
But religious freedom is a fundamental right. The Constitution protects not only the right to believe or not believe, but also the right to express and to manifest religious beliefs. We have the absolute right to believe whatever we want about God, faith, and religion, and we have the right to act on our beliefs unless those actions harm others. Religious freedom doesn't give us the right to impose our beliefs on others or to harm other people. Freedom means freedom for everyone, and it's wrong to treat people differently because of who they are. If House Bill 4012 passes, it could give people the right to argue that civil rights and non-discrimination laws, child abuse laws, and domestic violence laws don't apply to them.
The bill, as I understand it and as I read it, simply guarantees me the fact that I'll be able to live out my faith in the world without my government impinging upon that, unless there's some really good reason. And if there's a good reason, they have to use the least restrictive means to mediate whatever the problem is. We are an interactive people. We have to work with each other. And my faith may bump into your faith. This bill provides a solution to that. It guarantees a day in court for both of us. I've heard all manner of things here, all manner of social issues. This, as I see it, is a bill that remediates it, that gives us a chance to work out those issues in court when they arise. Thank you.
House Bill 4012 was just introduced in the House Tuesday. It's before the Chamber's Judiciary Committee, and if it's approved by the Chamber, will likely head to the Senate's Judiciary Committee as well. Joining us this evening to discuss the bill and others is the chair of one of those committees, Delegate John Schott. Delegate, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation, Ashton.
We should say that we invited the senator to be with us as well tonight, but he's caught up in a committee hearing of his own, and that's why he couldn't join us.
I'm sorry he's not here. Take a little heat off of me.
Well, we'll try to go easy on you. Let's start, though, with this Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I think there might be, it sounds like at least, there's a lot of confusion over what this bill actually does. Can you give us an explanation?
Yes, it's very unfortunate that there's so much misinformation about the bill. There's actually a federal counterpart that was enacted in 1993 at a time when a lot of the senators and representatives felt that the standards to be applied to recognize religious freedom had been loosened by a Supreme Court decision. And in fact, it was Senator Ted Kennedy who introduced the bill on the Senate side. And on the House side, there was a similar bill, and they passed near unanimously. And the bill that's before the Judiciary Committee is modeled after that. And as you indicated earlier, 21 states have sought to enact similar legislation. And basically what the bill is intended to do is to establish a test that can be applied in a court challenge to state action. When the state takes some action that infringes a substantial or imposes a substantial burden on someone who feels it infringes on their exercise of their religion. And so it's basically a mechanism to use as a shield or a defense to action by the state or some agency of the state that the person with a sincere religious belief feels infringes on that belief.
So there was a lot of controversy over a similar bill in Indiana last year that their state legislature took on. Opponents say that this allows businesses or it allows individuals to discriminate against someone. I think in Indiana or in another state, the case was that somebody didn't want to bake a cake for a gay wedding.
Right.
What do you have to say to those opponents who say this is just going to let my state discriminate against me?
Well, it wouldn't really resolve the issue between individuals. What it would do would be basically provide a mechanism to resolve, to serve as a defense by the person if the state took some action. For instance, in that case, if the city or the county or the state sought to revoke the license of the person who refused to serve, then that would be a way where the court could apply a standard to determine whether that was a proper exercise of the state's power or whether that was protected under the First Amendment. And there's various ways that people can respond to a situation where they feel their rights have been violated. If the person who was discriminated was within a protected class under our state law or state human rights act, then they would have recourse under that act, over and above anything the state might do. So it's really, the bill is really directed to a clash between a state agency and the individual who feels like they've been burdened, their exercise of their religion has been burdened.
Let's move on to another bill that was also the subject of a public hearing this week, and that's the Constitutional Carry Bill. Excuse me, it basically allows people to carry a firearm without having to go through a state permitting process. Governor Tomlin vetoed this bill last year. We know that this year it only takes a simple majority to override that veto, but why try this bill again if the state's highest ranking elected official says this isn't right for West Virginia?
The sponsors of this bill felt that their Second Amendment rights were infringed upon by the requirement that they had to pay money to get a permit to exercise those rights. And obviously from the vote that occurred last year in both the House and the Senate, a lot of people agreed. And so those sponsors brought that bill up again. They had some additional provisions in the bill. And then when it came to the Judiciary Committee, we added a few provisions of our own to try to address some of the issues that had been raised last year and hopefully make it a little more palatable. But it is a constitutional issue, and there are strong feelings that when the Constitution is involved, the state should not charge you a fee to exercise a constitutional right.
This bill, a controversial one that could see a veto, prevailing wage, another one, right to work, which your committee will take up tomorrow, those could all see vetoes, and it takes a simple majority to override. Do you think we'll see a lot of override votes in the House and the Senate this year?
I guess that depends on whether you see a lot of vetoes. But I think that the will of the legislature is, if the governor vetoes these bills, that they will challenge that veto.
Let's talk about an area that I think probably both chambers and the governor agree on, and that is substance abuse and curbing substance abuse in West Virginia. What kinds of things will your committee look at this year in that area?
Well, we had a number of interim meetings where we focused on various issues, and one of those interim meetings focused on the drug abuse issue. And of course, the Judiciary Committee is only one committee within the legislature, and so we look at more or less enforcement issues. There is also a special committee that the Speaker has appointed this year to deal with treatment and so forth and substance abuse issues that's populated by a lot of people with more health expertise than a bunch of lawyers, okay, which we have on the Judiciary Committee. But some of the bills we looked at were to add additional tools to law enforcement to help them deal with this growing epidemic. And for instance, one of the bills that we looked at was to add the ability to charge for conspiracy, with the idea of focusing on the drug kingpins, the people that are at the top of the ladder and not the fellow on the street that's just trying to make a few bucks. And the conspiracy charge can carry pretty heavy penalties, and it allows law enforcement to go up the chain to seek out those drug pens. And we also looked at a bill that basically would address one of the ways that drug money is flowing now is the use of gift cards or Western Union or so forth. It's not so much cash anymore. So law enforcement asked for some additional tools to deal with those type of situations, and there's a bill to provide them with those type of tools that will probably be taken up in our committee next week or the following week.
Since the GOP took the majority in both chambers last year, they've been talking about implementing an intermediate court of appeals, creating one of those courts. Will you all continue to look at that issue this year?
We will, but the focus is not so much on creating another court system. The focus is really on trying to guarantee all West Virginians and all businesses in the state a full and meaningful right of appeal. In the past, the Supreme Court has been able to decide whether they want to accept an appeal or not. They have changed their rules now, and they are trying to consider all cases on their merits, but there's really no guarantee that you'll get a full and meaningful appeal. So intermediate court is one method to get there, but it imposes substantial cost, and we're also looking at other options, other ways that we might address that or reach that goal with not necessarily with an intermediate court. As I'm sure you're aware, there's substantial strain on our budget this year. The last number I heard was we're probably $350 million short. So to create another court system, even if you do it the most efficiently, is a difficult thing to do right now. But we are focused on trying to figure out a solution so that people can feel comfortable, businesses, individuals can feel comfortable that they will get a full and meaningful appeal if they don't agree with something that happens in a lower court.
And the reason the senator couldn't join us tonight was because his committee is discussing a bill to create a judicial pay commission. Can you just briefly explain to us what does that mean? What would that do?
Basically, as I understand it, and I have looked at a draft of the bill, the judiciary would like for, instead of having to come to the legislature from time to time and actually lobby for a pay raise, they would prefer what many states do, is an independent commission to survey the salaries that are paid elsewhere and make a recommendation to the legislature as to what that should be, and then the legislature would act upon that recommendation. And it really would avoid, it's very uncomfortable for legislators. Now, I was a lawyer until I retired recently. It's uncomfortable for a judge to come to me as a lawyer and a legislator and ask for a raise. And I know they felt uncomfortable with that situation, and it was somewhat demeaning for them to have to do that. And this is seen as a much better way to do it, but it would still have to have legislative approval and would be subject to whether the money's available, just like anything else.
Okay. Delegate John Schott, Chair of the House Judiciary Committee, thank you so much for being here.
And thank you for having me.
We continue taking a closer look at members of the West Virginia Legislature tonight with a look at representatives from Central West Virginia.
Mike Hall represents the state's 4th Senatorial District from Putnam County. A Republican, Hall was first elected to the Senate in 2006 after serving in the House of Delegates. He was elected to that post in 1994. Senator Hall serves as the chair of the Senate's Finance Committee. Scott Cadle represents the state's 13th House of Delegates district. He's a Republican from Mason County. Delegate Cadle was first elected to the House in 2012. Michael Ely is from Jackson County, representing the state's 13th House District. A Republican, Ely was elected in 2014. One of the youngest members of the state legislature, Ely also serves as mayor of the city of Ravenswood, a position he was elected to in 2012.
Members of the Senate approved two bills today and will put four more to a vote tomorrow. The House of Delegates will also vote on four bills Friday. Those bills are all expected to easily pass in both chambers. But today, members took time to speak to other issues they're tracking this legislative session. We start with a short speech focused on a big issue, aiding the state budget.
I do want to mention Senate Bill 418 that was introduced today in first reading.
Senator Ron Miller of Greenbrier County stood to address the bill he introduced to the body today, a bill to increase revenues to help fund PEIA, the state's public employee health care program. West Virginia phased out its 6% sales tax on food, a process that ended July 1, 2013. But Miller says in tough economic times, it's time to start looking for revenue-increasing measures to help provide essential services.
All of us know it's a serious problem. We have a serious budget problem in the state. What this piece of legislation attempts to do is start that conversation by increasing the food tax 3%, not 6%, not 3%, which is about $75 million that we would take into our state's coffers. The Senate on Finance has talked about we need to work on this together, all aspects, and this is one of those aspects.
Miller's bill also includes language to protect the state's earned income tax credit for working West Virginians based on family size and income. In the House of Delegates, Delegate Sean Hornbuckle from Cabell County asked his fellow delegates to start having a conversation about things they can do to help minority populations in the state, groups he says are underserved or overlooked.
All lives matter. But also within all lives would be black lives. And every day we get up here and we say the Pledge of Allegiance. Again, I know most of you in here and I also think you have a good heart. But the one thing that we all do is end it with justice for all. Justice for all. So as you leave this body today, all I ask of you is just to think about that. And if there does come a bill, and it might not be me, it shouldn't be me just because I'm African American. It could be anybody. If there's a bill that comes up that is talking about those issues, just put it down. Give it an honest look and say, hey, how can we make this better? Hey, I think you might be reaching there. Or could you do this? Give it an honest look. We owe it to ourselves. Because at the end of the day, as a delegate from the first, and I think he put it, all lives matter.
Representatives of the Our Children, Our Future campaign are lobbying lawmakers for the fourth year at the State House. The group advocates for children's issues. This year, their priorities include providing mental health services in public schools and increasing access to locally grown healthy foods, among others. But as Liz McCormick reports, the campaign will also have to fight budget cuts to child and family services.
The Our Children, Our Future campaign hosted their annual lobbying day just across from the state capitol at West Virginia's Culture Center. More than 900 kids and their families from around the state joined various child advocacy groups at the event. The campaign is advocating for 10 different pieces of legislation this year that looks to fight child poverty in West Virginia. One of those major issues is the budget cuts that could come to child and family services. Governor Tomlin's 2017 budget proposal includes cuts across the board for state agencies and even deeper cuts for other service programs. In the past, the governor has tried to cut family services that the Our Children, Our Future campaign successfully lobbied lawmakers to restore. This year, Senate President Bill Cole says he and his fellow legislators will continue to look for ways to keep these valuable programs whole.
I'm proud to say that this is the first year that these programs have not seen a budget cut at the beginning of the legislative session. It is my hope that although we are facing one of the toughest times financially that our state's ever seen, that we will be able to find a way to ensure that we all work together to keep these programs funded and operational.
But not all groups are safe. Emily Chittenden Laird is the director of the West Virginia Child Advocacy Network. Her group works with kids who have been sexually abused, and it's facing a cut this year.
Child advocacy centers in the budget have an 8.3% budget cut proposed. What that looks like on a local level is about a $10,000 per program cut. Our programs run on very slim budgets, and given all the growth that we've seen over the years and the budget situation, their budgets are very thin.
Chittenden Laird says the impact of child abuse over a lifetime is tremendous, and that even though it's a tight budget year, lawmakers need to be investing in services to help kids, not cutting services.
The Centers for Disease Control estimate the cost of child abuse at $210,000 per child. And so you think about that over a lifetime and what that's doing to our state. It's impacting substance abuse. It's impacting workforce issues because there's more absenteeism. There are mental health issues. There are health issues associated with this. So all the things that we hear our legislators concerned about and talking about really tie back to kids who have been exposed to extreme poverty, kids who have been exposed to violence.
And she says the number of kids in the state who are abused is going up.
We're seeing 83% more kids walk through our doors than we did 6 years ago. We have 15% more kids than last year. We can't turn these kids away. Where do we send them? Where do they go? The alternative for them is that they don't get help. And we have to do right by our children.
The budget cut is mostly affecting state agencies like Chittenden Laird's, but there are other groups who aren't facing cuts, like Sam Hickman's. Hickman is the executive director of the West Virginia chapter of the National Association of Social Workers. While his association doesn't receive state funding, Hickman says the budget cuts will still affect his group.
The budget cut will have a trickle-down effect. For example, we provide continuing education for professional social workers. And a lot of state employees won't be able to take advantage of that this year because state agencies have been cut and their travel, the ability to allow their employees to travel has been really severely limited.
Still, Hickman hopes lawmakers make children's programs a priority.
If we continue to allow generations of children to raise up, to be raised up in poverty, to be raised up without the proper supports to help them see how they can establish a future for themselves in West Virginia, then we're going to be stuck putting out fires. We have to find a way to work on prevention and support programs, the really high-touch programs that are available to folks where they live. In-home services are not statewide. Until they are, and until they're available to a larger group of people, there are families that are going to struggle.
The Our Children, Our Future campaign is working with lawmakers to find ways to lessen the cuts programs are facing. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick at the Capitol.
Tomorrow on the legislature today, there have been plenty of changes on the Capitol complex over the past year. Tomorrow we'll take a look at a few of the construction projects with a special report and an interview with Acting Secretary of the Department of Administration, Jason Pizzatella. This has been the legislature today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.